everybody, and welcome to Face the Culture. Kim Kennedy here saying hello. So glad that you're with us. And it is my great pleasure today to introduce you to a writer who has written quite an interesting book. Her name is Farris Cassell, and the name of the book is called Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. This, folks, is a true story. And, you know, it's often said that truth is maybe stranger than fiction, but it's certainly more interesting very often. Let me give you just a brief overview. The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America by award-winning investigative journalist and National Jewish Book Award-winning author Farris Cassell chronicles the astonishing story of six-year-old twins Stefan and Marion Hess and their parents getting torn from their home in Amsterdam and deported to what their mother called a dying hell, the infamous concentration camp at Bergen-Belsen. Through the use of Stefan and Marion's personal memories and historical details, Inseparable provides a vivid account of the Hess family's struggle to survive the Holocaust. When caught in childish mischief, Stefan and Marion ran from SS soldiers, making a game of seeking who could get closest to the guard tower before being warned he would be shot. They witnessed their father beaten beyond recognition, dodged strafing warplanes, and somehow survived in a place where the children looked for bread between the corpses. Above all, this is the unforgettable story of a young mother and father who were willing to sacrifice everything for their children. From the Hesses' prosperous pre-war life in Germany to their desperate ride in a bullet-strapped boxcar through the rubble of the collapsing Third Reich, Farris Cassell weaves the twins' personal memories and historical details into a gripping narration of this heroic family's ordeal. Farris, good day and welcome.
Hi, Kim. This is great to be on with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. And just reading the beginning, it's pretty incredible. And I know we want to read this book. Tell us why we should. What are we going to learn from this book? Take us to the beginning.
All right. You will learn the story of one of the few families to have survived the Holocaust intact. Family of four, they were German Jews, Carl and Ilse Hess. He was a successful businessman in a multinational corporation in Germany. She was the beautiful daughter of a prominent Jewish family in Germany. They were married, they were happily living as hopeful and a promising young couple, looking forward to a long life together with and raising a family. However, when the Nazis took over and began enacting their terrible laws, the Hesses, Carl and Ilse, saw the writing on the wall and they knew they needed to leave. So they began planning how to leave. Carl, being an executive in a multinational corporation, was his company helped him to transfer to Amsterdam. The Netherlands was then a neutral country. It had declared its neutrality time and again, and it had been neutral during World War I, and so the Hesses believed they would be safe there. They did not go further, did not go to America at that time, because Ilse's family could not leave. They were leaders in their Jewish community, and they felt responsible for helping all the other members of their community, and wouldn't leave before all the Jews in their town were safe. So Carl, you know, went across the border safely and easily with the papers from his company. But Ilse and he went to Amsterdam and began to establish himself in his new position and find an apartment for them to live in. Ilse's job turned out to be much more dangerous and difficult. crossing the border with all of their possessions. It was Hitler's mantra during that time that the Jews must leave, but their wealth stays in Germany with the Nazis. At that time, this was before the Nazis were intending to murder all Jews. At that time, they just wanted to get rid of Jews in their Aryan, supposedly Aryan culture. So Ilse was just the most resourceful. She was 23 years old, courageous as one could imagine. So she went first to her appointment with the Nazi official who was in charge of exit visas, of giving exit visas. She went with her accountant, and she went dressed very nicely, fashionably but respectably, as always, complete with a hat with a feather on it. And the Nazi official kept insisting that she had lots of wealth, that she wasn't reporting and allowing the Nazis to see, and therefore to take. So as she was being browbeaten by this Nazi official, her accountant, who she took with her, who was not Jewish, stopped the Nazi official and said, "Hold it, look at her. She obviously spends every penny her husband makes." So both of the men left, and case closed, she was permitted to be granted her exit visa. But then there was the problem of how to take her valuables out of the country and cross the border with them. They had purchased a number of important pieces of jewelry in order to help protect them from the Nazis. The Nazis were famous for granting Jews safety in exchange for their valuables. So she had all these valuables. She had given them to a friend in Switzerland for safekeeping. She asked the friend to return them to her. And as I said, she was a respectable young woman, married woman, and dressed that way, never wore makeup. She was actually a very beautiful young woman. She, in order to cross the border, she applied heavy makeup. She bought mesh stockings and a red vest with a red jacket with black velvet lapels. And instead of trying to hide her jewelry, she pinned it to the lapels of her jacket, and just simply boarded the train and crossed the border with no problem, thinking that, as she later, hiding her jewelry in plain sight, as it turned out. As she later laughed, she looked like a 10-mark hooker, and nobody questioned the jewelry at all. So Carl and Ilse did make it to Amsterdam safely. They lived there for 2 years as a young couple, and then their twins were born there, Stefan and Marion. They lived happily with their children for 2 years, and then in 1940, the Germans invaded the Netherlands, took over, and the Hess family was trapped. Eventually, Carl and Ilse did everything they could think of to escape deportation. And there were a number of options available to them. One thing that they considered was the possibility of paying a Dutch family to hide their children, which a number of Jews did do, thinking that that would protect their children from deportation and death. So Carl and Ilse debated that, and in the end, they decided that no one would protect their children as fiercely as they would themselves, and decided to try to escape deportation. Eventually, they were deported, among the last people deported, first to a transit camp, Westerbork, where Jews were then sent further east to the mostly to the killing camps. Late in the war, a new camp was established called Bergen-Belsen. This was at a time when the Germans began losing ground in their war. They began losing territory that they had already conquered, countries that they had occupied, the Allies were beginning to take back. And so at that point, that is the point at which the Germans realized they would need a special camp for influential Jews to be held who might serve as hostages and could be traded to the Allies for German POWs who were trapped. And so the Hesses were deported to this camp, Bergen-Belsen, which was in Germany, not in Poland, where the extermination camps were built and operating at full speed. Horribly, to talk about it that way. But the Hesses were deported to Bergen-Belsen, barely survivable. There were harsh conditions, but the Jews were meant to be kept alive. But as the war wore on, the Germans became more desperate, and they began evacuating the killing camps in the east. So why would they do that? The Jewish prisoners who remained there, who still survived, why would they shut those camps down? The only reason was to hide their terrible secret. Only at that point, the world did not know what was happening to the Jews. A few of the Allied leaders, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin, who was then an ally, they did know. Word had gotten to them, but they didn't let that word out about what was happening. That was still the Nazi secret. And so all these Jews that were still in Auschwitz and Sobibor and in other killing camps were deported to Bergen-Belsen. They came on cattle cars, sick and diseased. They were force marched, and many died en route. But many did arrive at Bergen-Belsen, sick, diseased, and starving, and spread the diseases all through the camp. There was not enough food, there was no hygiene, there were not enough barracks for them to sleep in, people to sleep in. And so people were dying at a horrific, horrific rate, maybe 5,000 a day. The twins and Carl and Ilse, still in the camp, still surviving, were at hard labor, but they too were on the verge of death. Carl weighed 90 pounds towards the end of their imprisonment. The twins, who by the end of their imprisonment were 7 years old, they weighed 60 pounds, and Ilse weighed somewhere in between those two numbers. So they survived. How did they survive at that time? Ilse put, well, Carl almost did not survive. Because he was fluent in five different languages, he was put in charge of a work detail. It's called a work commando. So as head of that commando, he tried to be as easy on his weakened and starving crew as possible, but he too was under Nazi guards. One time he allowed the men under his command to rest during a break when the Nazi guards themselves were lounging a little ways separate from them and eating their own lunch. The guards came back before Carl could get his staff back to work. And so the Nazi guards decided to punish him and make a show of their power. They beat him to a pulp. They immersed him, almost drowned him in a sewage tank, and then dragged him to a field to die. Fortunately, friends, fellow prisoners helped to, and at that point, his wife Ilsa could recognize him only by the shirt that he wore. He was beaten so badly, but friends dragged him to what was called the sick bay, which was simply a barracks with no doctors, no medicine, where people either lived or died. Ilsa then volunteered for her work detail to be part of the sick bay staff, which means just prisoners who cleaned up the messes, so that she was there able to help take care of Carl. The twins, there was nothing like a nursery, no place for children. The children just ran around free. The twins just sat. In the beginning, they had run around, they had invented games, but they too were starving by the last months of Bergen-Belsen. And they just sat quietly on the barracks, on the barracks benches or on the bunks, and did nothing all day. So later, Carl would say that his children were just gray. Their faces had turned from the wonderful rosy color that children may have. And they just sat, and their faces turned gray. They had almost nothing to eat. Stephen Hess would later say that really they had no childhood at all. It was stolen from them completely. Marion would later say her memories also included that life was gray, everything around them gray. She said she knew there must be birds that sang in Bergen-Belsen, but she never remembered a single bird song. She knew there must be flowers, but she never saw one. She knew that there must have been some goodness there, but she never saw it at all, never saw kindness among the Nazis at all. And finally, Himmler, the Nazi official who ran the concentration camps, decided that he must evacuate some of these so-called privileged Jews who might be traded for better surrender terms to the Allies. So he loaded the Hess family and others on other Jews of Bergen-Belsen onto three trains, which were destined to go to a concentration camp in the Czech Republic called Theresienstadt. There, he thought that he would be able to negotiate with the Nazis, hold these prisoners in a survivable camp, and negotiate surrender terms better, terms, not complete surrender, terms, and also for himself, that he might not be treated as a prisoner, as a war, oh, I'm blanking on the word, as one of the Nazis' leaders. He hoped that he would be able to survive the surrender, the inevitable surrender. The Hess's train never made it to Bergen-Belsen. It It was so late in the war that the train route took it through active battle zones where their car was strafed at one point, and bullets came through the Hess's cattle car, almost killing them, killing others in that car. Their train had to detour and detour again and then again, trying to find a safe passage through the fighting. In the end, the train had to come to a stop in East Germany, where a bridge had been blown up. There was no way to go backwards or forwards. The Hesses in their cattle car, where people were dying of disease and starvation with every mile that the train went, the Hesses did not know why the train had stopped. Karl had been named the leader by the members, by the other Jewish prisoners in the car. He had been named the leader of that car. And so he was asked to go out and find out what was happening. That was risky to get out of the cattle car. SS guards might shoot any prisoner who stepped out. But he cautiously stepped out. He did not find the SS guards. He walked towards the front of the train and then towards the nearby woods, and there he found Soviet soldiers. This is Soviet Russian soldiers had captured the area. This is East Germany, what is now East Germany. And they told him that they had liberated the area and that the victims and who still survived in the train were free. He rushed back to the train and told people they were free, they could get out of the train. They flooded out of the train into a nearby town, which is called Troibitz, which was a partly abandoned town. Only women, mostly only elderly women and a few children stayed there. It was a farming town. The men had all been impressed into the German army, and most would never return. But the people, the starving Jews on this train, rushed into the town and found shelter, clean houses, empty houses, and food. In this farming town, they found cellars full of canned goods. They found poultry that they killed. And so the family and many of the Jews on this train survived. Many still were ill and diseased and would die even in this in their newfound freedom.
You know what, Paris? Go ahead.
Ilse herself had contracted typhus. It's a miracle that they all survived.
It truly is. And what a great place to end our conversation. Listeners, there is so much to this book that what Faris has shared with you is just the tip of the iceberg. This is a true story. I'm waiting for this to be turned into a movie or a miniseries. It ought to be. But you've just gotten a taste of it. This needs to be read. Faris, I think you would agree with me that in the times we are in right now, with anti-Semitism rampant, what's going on in the Middle East, that we need to be reminded of the homeland of the Jews, why it was formed in 1948, and that anti-Semitism was alive then and it's alive today. And the humanity of these people really hits you hard. But I'll tell you what else, what I see weaved in this story is the grace of God, because this is a miracle that they survived. The Jews who survived the Holocaust, it was truly miraculous. And so we see the hand of God in the best of times and worst of times and everything in between. And just so thankful these people survived. Tell us again the name of the book and where we can find to purchase it to read it ourselves.
Thanks, Kim. The book is called Inseparable: The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. So there is a spoiler in the title. It can be found on Amazon, online, any bookstore that any bricks and mortar bookstore will have it or could get it. So thank you. It's widely available.
Wonderful, wonderful story, folks. I think that, if you don't mind me saying so, in my impartial opinion, that we bring great writers, great filmmakers to you with quality products, stories, and this is no exception. So please check it out. And Faris, thank you again. It was a joy talking with you.